When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Thinking about gas mileage. A bottle of Lucas Complete Fuel Treatment can clean your system and help your engine get more MPGs. Right now, you can get two bottles for only $9.99. A great deal to help you go a great deal farther. Find Lucas Complete Fuel Treatment and everything you need for better fuel efficiency at any one of our 6,300 stores.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Zonk the Bronc, okay? The great Larry's, by the way, a Syracuse man. And what he does is he knocks out a little adult beverage there because of the fact that the Eagles, the last undefeated, remaining undefeated team in the NFL, got taken down by the Wash Commanders last night. So Zonk says, I'm a Commanders fan. And he popped a little bit of the bubbly.
Oh, I mean, you know how it goes. I mean, Mercury Morris for so long was definitely the first one popping the champagne and letting everybody know exactly how he felt about that record. And we have to say, perfect once again. The 72 Dolphins are the unblemished squad. The dreams, the hopes of all 32 teams has now officially come to an official end last night after that beating by the Commanders placed on the Eagles. And it was a sloppy game, Wolf. Sloppy, sloppy game. But the Commanders – and look at this. The Commanders, they're in playoff contention in that red-hot NFC East.
Yes. They're right there, man. Hey, listen, you know, now the funny thing, this is what made it so funny for me, because, of course, we all know the story of the 72 Dolphins and the fact that Zonk said, you know, a couple years ago when the Steelers started off 11-0 and the Commanders knocked them off, he said he was a Commanders fan, knocked the Steelers off from their 11-0 start. But Shula said the real story about that, he goes, the story that we all sit around and have champagne together is false. He says, that isn't true. He said Nick Bonacani and Dick Anderson, all right, the middle linebacker and safety, they lived next to each other in Coral Gables. So they went out in their driveway after, what I don't know, it was a few, you know, a bunch of years ago, something happened, and they popped the champagne bottle and toasted each other. He said, and they were too cheap to invite the rest of us.
Exactly. I was like, I'm surprised they weren't like those little champagne split bottles, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe ginger ale. There you go.
There we go. Hey, nobody knows the difference once it's in the glass. I'm just saying.
That's it. But yeah, Shula says they were too cheap. I love that.
That's pretty awesome. No, I mean, it was a fun story while it lasted.
Yes, but, exactly so. And it's,
but
you know,
now, do you ever see, off.
Yeah, do you ever see a team going undefeated? You know, I mean, the Patriots almost back at what, 2016 or something like that? They were 17-0 or I don't, was it? Maybe it was a decade earlier.
Was it? I was going to say that was a Randy Moss year. That was 42, Super Bowl 42.
Okay. Yeah, you know what?
They lost to the Giants.
I start quoting exact facts and figures. You better get a fact checker.
Listen, it's all good. It happens to the best ones. Once again, why let facts get in the way of a good story?
There you go.
Just sell it. Just believe it.
I knew I liked you, young man.
Yeah.
All right, here's another one for you. Tonight, buddy, it starts. Do you know what tonight is?
Oh, do I, my friend? Does it happen to be of a History Channel nature? And does it also have to do with an island named after a tree?
Yes, my friend. You are exactly on, because tonight is season 10, the premiere of The Curse of Oak Island. Yes, ooh, it's starting. Now, listen to this. After a decade of searching, Rick, Marty, that's the Laginas, okay, and the team return to Oak Island and immediately uncover evidence of a mysterious tunnel in the money pit. And for the first time ever, the Fellowship gets a clear look at an underground structure, getting them closer than ever to solving the 227-year-old mystery. What say you, Maximilian?
I mean, I am just over the moon. I mean, obviously we know that they have found some more cool stuff. We saw I was watching the Digging Deeper episode last night.
Yes, me too. Interesting.
Yeah, you saw that interesting wood piece that was found along the riverbank.
Yep.
When they were showing about how they dammed off and they sunk a ship for the specific purposes of creating that like swamp area. So, I mean, it was cool. I mean, there's some awesome stuff. I feel like it's almost like the treasure is looking up at them like, ha ha, up too far left, up too far right, too far south, too far north. I feel like it's like, or it's just, it's shimmying. Like, I feel like the treasure's shimmying below their feet. But no, it's pretty awesome. I can't wait to see what they start doing and what new technology and techniques and new finds they get starting up this season.
You know, it's so interesting in the fact that you think about this. When you come out with hewn timbers, okay, it's kind of like the timbers back in the 1600s, 1700s, where, you know, they got the adz, they're like an axe, and they chop away, and you can see where the marks on it, and it's 140 feet down, 100 feet down. What's going on? Who's down there creating tunnels, and why would you go to the trouble of putting tunnels down there? Unless there was a treasure, my friend.
And think about that. We're talking about an island, Wolf.
Right.
And B, an island that you could actually drill 100 feet down and still not hit water.
Well, no, they have hit water. Because
it was like dammed off. It was the dammed off water. But, I mean, normally you think an island, okay. I mean, it is this mass that's kind of connected. But you're thinking, okay, we're going to hit an aquifer or something by then. No. Outside of the man-made stuff that they're using to dam it off and protect the treasure, it still goes deeper and deeper. It's crazy to me.
It is crazy. But, you know, when you see the remnants of a couple wharfs where in the harbor of Oak Island, which is up by Nova Scotia, for those of you that are not connecting with this, you've got a situation where it's obvious you brought in some ships. There's a wharf. They offload. They've got oxen shoes. You know, the ox shoes. They put on oxen to pull stuff. You know, I mean, there's just a whole lot of stuff going on there, and you're like going, great googly moogly. Are they going to find some treasure eventually or not? They do water testing. They got gold in the water, but they can't find this chapel vault, which was found, close to 100 years ago or something, when they found, you know, they first got some sort of view of the chapel vault thing, but they've not been able to find it. So I don't know. My wife says they're just stringing you along. And it does feel like that at times, but I still believe it's the treasure. It's there. It's a 227-year-old mystery. Now I'm locked in. You got to find out.
Well, it's 10 years in, Wolf. I mean, you have to find out what happens at this point. You have literally, you know, dedicated hours. hundreds of hours to them digging a hole. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean.
Yep.
At this point, I need to see some. I need to see a gold coin. I got to see a gold coin.
Okay, but how about this? How about the cross that they found made of metal,
the lead. Yeah, lead cross.
That was, yes, and it linked it back to the Templars.
The Templar lead cross.
Now, come on, now that's intriguing.
That is intriguing, and because I mean, when you think about, you know, the course that everybody had to make to get to this island,
right?
You know what I'm saying? Like from Europe, like. The navigation, like to get across the Atlantic, but then to get through all of like the lakes and rivers to get through the Great Lakes to get over there.
It's easy. They got GPS. That's not a problem.
That is correct. Gangplank security systems. Exactly. No, it's great.
That's all it is. Exactly.
Yeah, that crow's nest guy loves Garmin. You know what I'm saying?
Too bad the Titanic didn't have it, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Either he had a Garmin or a Magellan. I don't know. He might have been busy going around the southern part of the world. No, I digress. See, there we go. See, I start doing nerd jokes. And
well,
it's not good for
we're about to jump the shark with this one, but we
no,
gotta,
we're not.
We're gonna
we
watch.
Are not gonna jump the shark
tonight at 9 o'clock. It is the Curse of Oak Island. So, season 10, episode 1. We got to find out. Do they find this treasure? They do find some sort of mysterious tunnel. We got to find out what's going on down 100 feet down in a island. I don't know. But it is intriguing. But what say you, my friend, after you taking a look at, you know, the film? I know you watched some film from the game and everything. Anything popping out at you?
I was just – the one thing that popped out, because I was watching a little bit of defensive film, DeMonte KZ.
Ooh.
Man, what could have been had he been available the first half of the season?
You know, that's a great thought.
Yeah, because he hits so hard. Well, yeah. I mean, he flies around. And it's not like, oh, he's been off 8 weeks. Of course he's going to fly around. No, he was doing this in training camp.
Right.
When there were not even shoulder pads on people, he was doing the same exact thing that I saw on film. So it was one of those things where you said, okay, practice makes perfect. And that's what I just kept seeing. He just kept showing up. Even when it wasn't a tackle or the pass was overthrown, like KZ's in the area and he's hunting. He's like, oh, that's not legal. He is not going for the ball yet, or the ball was clearly out of the way. I'm not allowed to hit that human being and knock him out. I mean, that's literally what it was. It was like a shark going around like the ocean, and he's like, that sea turtle's not, he's not ready yet. He has one fin in.
Right.
I want all four fins out when I attack him. So I'm just going to wait. Just know that I'm there.
You can expand on this. You think about the fact that we were without Minka and the same kind of thing. What would have happened with KZ and TJ Watt back, healthy Minka? Man, oh, man. It makes you kind of go, ooh. What could have been in that first half of the season?
Yeah, and also, I mean, the boost that it gives your offensive scoring, because, I mean, that's one of the things that's, you know, it's just a tough pill to swallow is where the Steelers at, you know, that they haven't been scoring points, and then you have another 20-point display. But, I mean, you know, we want to see what does it look like to get in the 30s in scoring just, you know, once.
It could have been this past Sunday.
Feel comfortable with it. Ah. So I just think that probably would have aided some of those opportunities for the offense. But, I digress. And obviously, you know, Matthew Wright's going to continue to work on his kicking. But it was so cool to see that. I thought that was one of the things that really jumped off of the screen for me, Wolf, was just how much what KZ did, and you could see that he was in the meetings, right?
Right. Oh,
even though he couldn't play, he was there, and he was absolutely locked in and dialed in. Because I didn't feel like, you know, DBs for the most part, from what I watched, it was about the first half. They just weren't out of position, you know, and I think that was something that was good. I mean, Andy Dalton, a couple of those passes in the first, I mean, he was right on the money. When he did, but when he was off, he was off. And you could see that there was pressure involved with that, which was nice to see quarterbacks getting diverted because of the pressure and not succeeding.
Absolutely. You know who else I really appreciated was Cam Sutton. You know, he broke on a couple of passes and made some great plays. And, you know, quietly, he's been having a very good season, I think, in my most humble opinion. I think Cam Sutton is one heck of a ball player. You watch him out there, and you know that he first made his bones as a guy who was one of those movable guys, one of those guys that you can move inside, outside. You could probably get away with playing safety with Cam Sutton, one of those guys who is, you know, back-end pieces that is capable of delivering a good performance at wherever you put him on the back end. And he's quietly, I thought, just come along and done a very good job thus far.
No, I agree with you. I agree that Cam has been steady Eddie, so to speak. You know
right.
what I'm saying? Like he has just been a guy who's just played his job, right? I mean, whether you send him inside to the slot, whether you have him manned up on the outside, I mean, he can do it all. Blitz off the edge. You know, he gives you nice man coverage, but he also can play off the ball in a lot of the zone stuff that we roll to. You know, and it's just refreshing to see that you can count on him to be there. And I, you know, and here's another thing. I'm gonna throw it right across the way. I thought that Levi Wallace, you know, coming
yes.
back into action, dealing with the dings on dings on dings that he's dealt with
yes.
to get back here. You know, he did a great job. He drew a tough assignment. Obviously, Chris Olave was one of their main focal points in this offense. And Levi, more often than not, found himself mano a mano with Chris Olave. I thought he acquitted himself well. You know, I thought he played physical. I thought he was bumped. There was just some fantastic catches by Olave that you – I mean, you're right on the guy. You know what I'm saying? He
right,
still makes
right.
a couple of catches. You're just like, hey, man, that's par for the course. That dude gets paid too. That's the reason why he got drafted in the first round. You know?
I mean, yes.
He is that good. But I love the way he defended a lot of those sideline – deeper passing routes, and of course, you know, he was right in position, but KZ came across on that sideline pass where KZ drew the pass interference. But I mean, Levi was right there trying in front of him, trying to combat the ball and everything. And nice interception. So I mean, there was a lot of good play by our secondary, and that was really great to see when you're talking about having the absence of Minka out there, you know, not out there, but on the sidelines, and it didn't feel uncomfortable, right?
Right.
You know, you wonder what could have been had KZ been in against Buffalo and that Gabe Davis play. I'm not throwing shade on anybody else,
right,
but
you.
I'm just saying, Gabe Davis might not have gotten up.
That's very true. You know who else we can throw a little bouquet at was Arthur Millett. You don't remember
yes.
in that second quarter. On a third and seven, he's in man coverage, and you got Olave going up the seam, right? And it's kind of like he's like almost running a fade route while he's at in the seam. And what do we got? We got Millett in man-for-man coverage and just dislodging the ball in a perfectly timed, you know, running with the guy, reaching for the hands, and then ripping through the hands. It was perfectly done by Arthur Millett. Man, salute on that one.
Yeah, no, Arthur, once again, Arthur's also been one of those guys, right? We don't talk about him as much.
Right.
But
we should. Exactly.
Yeah, manning that nickel position, that's a lonely world, man. You got the – it's like the island in between the islands.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and
you normally are now starting to get more of your top receivers trying to get in those slot positions if they're tweener height, right? Because
right.
they know that middle area in that slot is going to draw – a different type of defender, and that different type of defender has been Arthur Millett, and Arthur Millett's done a great job of defending a lot of that short stuff across the middle, you know, some of the more popping middle routes, not necessarily the deeper routes, or sometimes they're running exchange, what we call exchange routes, where they're running the rubs and the inside guy becomes the outside guy down the sideline that now takes kind of that up and out type of motion, and then next thing you know, Arthur Millett's playing corner, right?
Yeah.
And the corner's actually playing the nickel because of the exchange responsibilities, and it's something that he's never complained, and the dude will blitz off the edge in a heartbeat and try and put his face through the numbers of the quarterback, you know, and that,
yes.
that's a great sign.
And you know,
you have
one
a willing
of,
guy,
yeah, one of the things too, he's a willing participant coming off the edge and tracking down a back from behind. Look, that's no easy deal. You go down the line of scrimmage and the backs are cutting, and you can get in all kinds of chaos with all the big heavy hoofers, those large prairie mammals in the trenches, falling over and everything. And yet he's got no fear, man. You watch him go. He goes after it. I mean, it's not even he's got no regard for his safety or anybody else's for that matter.
No, absolutely not. And he sacrifices it all for the team, so – great kid. I mean, tremendous story. You highlighted it, Wolf, talking about just what it took to get here, and to see him flourishing is truly an awesome thing. Well,
right.
Wolf, you
yes.
know what it is?
It's time, right?
That's right. It's time. Wait a minute.
Episode two of the Curse of the Curse.
Or it's just the first commercial break, because you know it's going to be a long premiere tonight. So
yes, here we go.
We're taking the first commercial break here of our, you know, Curse of Oak Island / In the Locker Room edition of the show.
Of Tomlin Tuesday.
That's right. It is a Tomlin Tuesday. The Tomlin press conference will come on right after us, after our show ends down there on the south side. And then, of course, the man, the legend, Stan Saverin will take over after that. But you know, going into the next segment.
Yes.
Let's continue to talk about some of the performance. Let's talk about the defense. What went right?
Yeah.
So well, I mean, I know we kind of went on yesterday, kind of hitting some of the highlights, but let's dive a little bit deeper when we come back. On a defensive day as well. You know, defensive Tuesday. How about that?
Absolutely. Tuesday. That works for me, my friend.
We're not going to be offensive till Wednesday, at least. You know, strictly be defensive when we come back here in the locker room with Wolf and Starks here on SNR and ESPN Radio.
We're coming in talking about defensive stuff, right?
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio. Presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Dalton in the gun. He's back. Big rush. Throws it long down the field. That pass will be dropped. Broken up by Arthur Millett on Chris Olave, who appeared to have it for an instant. And then Millett just knocked the ball out of his grasp.
You gotta love that. Arthur Millett running stride for stride, mano a mano, right up the seam. And it's kind of like a little fade route. He's fading to the outside. There's on the outside as a guy stopped and did a stop route. And so it's Millett and it's Olave, this kid that can tear the top off the coverage. And they go mano a mano, bam-o. I love it. Millett makes that move, gets up, rips the ball out of the hands. And what a great job this guy has done, because whether it's covering people and going into the game, he had one forced fumble, 27 tackles, a sack, a pass defense. I mean, Arthur Millett is what Mike Tomlin said when he proffered at the beginning, said, you know what, he's a real NFL dude.
Well, I mean, it's apparent he's an NFL dude outside of the fact that he's already in the NFL.
Well, okay, Captain Obvious, way to go.
I'm just saying, it's like, yeah, he's a real NFL dude. I'm like, well, I should hope so.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
You know, I mean, there's just something. When Mike Tomlin says it, it carries a little deeper meaning. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I know what it means. You got to have a little fun in the morning.
I
so
got you.
I decided to play the Captain Obvious game. But, you know, you're right. I mean, Arthur, what he provides, what he's – you know, such a good young man, as far as he's really disciplined on his keys, and he doesn't allow plays to bleed into one another, meaning bad plays don't trickle into, you know, worse plays.
Yes.
Or back-to-back bad plays. Like, he's a guy that can really just change his mind, change his head, and just let it out off his system and get right back out there and play as though it's play one of the game again. And that's something that's really cool to see. And, you know, I really like our secondary. You know, obviously I wish they were healthier. But
right.
I like the pieces that we have in that secondary. And, you know, and T.A. was very frank with us in training camp, Wolf, right?
Right.
Talking about, hey, you know, we got to have at least three starting corners, because if we have three, that means we'll have two.
Right.
And, you know, but he didn't count Arthur Millett into that equation, right? Nickelback's his own special position. And so he was referring to the outside guys. And we were talking about a tight heat that was in the middle of this defense for that nickel and extra safety. You thought about DeMonte KZ there. You
right.
thought about Arthur Millett. You thought about what's the boy? He had his kid. I can't remember his name now from training camp. That was having a good camp, and then he got injured. What's his name?
Man, I can't remember.
It's gonna crush me too. But it was like, remember, it was like three of them that were competing really hard for that. And of course, Arthur ends up winning that position in that battle. I thought that was that just showed his mental toughness, right? Even with a hot contest for the numbers game, because I would say defensive back and secondary was tied there with wide receiver, would you say? The deepest positions going into training camp?
Very deep,
as far as how many guys you had, and to see the dust settle and to see guys rise up to the occasion. You know, I loved, like you said, Arthur Millett. You mentioned Cam Sutton, right? Showing their ilk, even though you're bringing in, and you know, you brought in Akello last year, so I still count him as a new guy.
Right.
And then you bring in Levi Wallace. And Cam does not blink, does not flinch. Like you said, and then you bring in DeMonte KZ at that safety position to compete with Terrell Edmonds, right? Trey Norwood. And all these guys still found a way, right? The cream rose to the top.
Yes.
You know, because of that. Now, granted, you know, you got a great guy, because I feel like that Miles Killebrew kind of plays that nickel/nickel linebacker type position. We don't really see him as much because of Arthur Millett, the job that he's doing. And his blitz capability, you know, doesn't give you that much. Marcus Allen, who was injured all through camp, right? He doesn't really get on the field on defensive snaps. Like, these guys are now really core four special teams guys.
Yes.
So it just goes to show you how good Arthur has gotten, you know, and even from last year to this year, taking that jump and getting even more comfortable with the position and responsibilities, that he's not even been usurped through all the change and everything else.
You know, when Mike Hilton left, it was, to me, that was a big piece of the defense leaving, because Mike Hilton just had that knack. You know, Terrell Edmonds talked about it. They referred to him in the D-back room as a guy that was really 6'4", 250, rather than the, you know, the 5'8", whatever Mike Hilton is, 5'7", and, you know, 100 buck, whatever. But they said, you know, he's got the stealth mode cloak. You know, he can sneak into on the blitzes, and he times it up so well. I mean, there was everything. Mike Hilton was just a great nickel corner, you know, and then I felt like we lost something there when we lost Mike Hilton, and then to have Arthur Millett come now and do some of the work that he's doing, it's very Hilton like you know, it's very Mike Hilton like in my mind, just watching what he does and the way that he, you know, it's not a totally reckless abandon, but he is not one that's worried about business decisions on the field. He is going about his business 100 miles an hour, and I appreciate the way he plays, because he's really a kind of a throwback guy.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's just, hey, what's the job? Yeah. The job is to hit the guy with the ball? Gotcha. I'm good.
You want me to blow things up? I'm good, you know?
Exactly. Say less, let me do more.
No doubt about it. And that's one of the things that I love about him, is the enthusiasm that he brings. He's, you know, he's a little bit louder in the locker room, I think, than Mike Hilton was. But I don't know for a fact, because I've not been around, you know, exactly so. But you hear things. And so a guy like Arthur, you know, Millett, would be – he's one of those guys that is a leader with big hits out there. And I think that he just really adds to the defensive back room with his level of play, both against the run and against the pass.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And the way he fits into the defense and can play near the line of scrimmage is just an added bonus. He's not a guy that has to play off and in zone and, oh, my gosh, I got a man responsibility. You know, oh, my goodness, it's a good receiver. No, it doesn't matter.
No.
Nameless gray face.
Yep.
Nameless gray face that is detached from the offensive line grouping and tight end grouping. That's my guy. That's all he knows. And I thought that, you know, and to see that, you know, you always get excited about that, because I think, you know, he does a great job at that. And you know, he fits in well. I think with the way that secondary room is set up, he's a personality that fits right in there, right? Because you think of, Terrell. Terrell's kind of a more cooler, calm, collected type of guy.
Right.
Minka's a cerebral, apparently, what they talked about. Grumpy guy. He's a grumpy cat.
Grumpy kitty.
Grumpy kitty. And then, you know, I don't really know that much about Akello, but Akello just seems like, you know, a good dude. You know, but not one that's too vocal or anything. Him and Levi, kind of a little bit more quiet. Cam is the other one I feel like is a very loud, boisterous guy.
Right, so, correct.
Yeah, definitely from his sideline personality. And when they come off the field, very vocal. And I feel like him and Arthur kind of are those two that are like, okay, we're the mouthpieces, right? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
When a coach wants to get your attention, we're the whistles. And I think that's kind of a cool dynamic to see what everybody's role is within that construct. And there's no competing personalities. I think everybody kind of builds off of each other.
Unquestionably so. And another guy that is starting to stack some good performances together is the aforementioned that you mentioned was Levi Wallace. You know, a guy who had some issues with the shoulder, you know, had to go back and play against his old team. You know, which is always – that's kind of one of those things where it's tough when you take it on the chin versus your old team. But he's got now 21 tackles. He's got 6 passes defensed. He's got 2 interceptions. And you start to see the competitiveness and his ability to really come out and play over the last couple of weeks. You know, it takes some adjustment. You got to get adjusted to new digs, you know, new place, new DC, new everything. And it takes a little while to get comfortable, and then your plane starts to catch up with your comfortability.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it takes time. I mean, we talk about, you know, offensive line a lot, and as far as the continuity that it takes to get comfortable with each other. I think for secondary, that's the next toughest grouping to deal with because of all of the mix of responsibilities. You know, they're working off of a coverage scheme.
Right.
That has loose principles until the offense disperses from a huddle and lines up. You know,
right?
If you say I've got the outside receiver and that's my man, and then that dude runs in motion, you're like, oh, okay, either I got to run or I got to bump. And then if I bump, now what does my responsibility become? If we are doing an exchange, right? Or how does it move when it's overshifted by an entire gap or two? You know, what am I now keying on? You know, all those things kind of play just like an offensive line, right? Like we have a base protection call, but the defense hasn't lined up to declare yet. We got to figure out who the mic is. Then, of course, once we have our motion, now does that mic change, right? Does our rule responsibilities change? So now that changes my set.
Yes.
Now how do I adjust my set based off of what the new mic ID is? Are we leaving this guy open? Is he the hot that the quarterback's accounting for? Or do we need to cover up the quarterback? I'm waiting for him to give me those keys so that I can now adjust on the fly based off of what's presented. And I think that's what kind of, when you look at defensive backs, that's the same thing that happens with them in the secondary. A lot more communication has to go on once we show them. You know, if they're stuck in nickel and we happen to come out in a base look, and now you got the H-back detached on the opposite side. Okay, well, somebody has to make a decision. Who's going to be the extra man in the box? Is it the safety coming down from depth? Or is it that nickel bumping in and playing that kind of eighth man in the box? All those things have to kind of play together. And I feel like there's a level of communication beyond just the call that a lot of players have to deal with. And so it's a tough job. And those guys are starting to come together.
And you know what? I think it really was emphasized by their work over Taysom Hill. You know, you think about Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
He's a quarterback. He's a Wildcat quarterback. There's a difference between the two, like we were talking about last night and the point after, right? He plays the slot. He plays the tight end. He plays H-back. He's played wide receiver. He's played running back. You've got to account knowing where he's at. You've got to account for the down distance and personnel grouping they're in, and then you make your defense kind of, you know, encompass whatever he brings to that you know, Swiss Army knife body of his. You got to account for where he lines up if he's as an H-back and what he likes to do, or the Wildcat quarterback, or the wide. You know, I mean, it's just, that's a lot to take in. They defensed him very, very well.
Yeah, or just plain tight end. I mean, he literally plays everywhere on the offense except for offensive line.
Right.
And so
too bad he should do that just to, you know,
just give it a shot, you know, just make it all encompassing. Say I played everywhere. I deserve an opportunity at this, but you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, think about Taysom Hill. For all the places he lined up, he had exactly 1 yard of production.
Yeah. That's like unbelievable. But again, it goes to the coaches being on the job. When Taysom Hill's in the game, you got to know not only is he in the game, where he is in the game. And then because of your scouting, then you've got to adjust your defense to account for the position that he's playing and what they like to do with him in that, you know, and hope that it's not, one of those, snipe hunts.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and to see Jerry O running around with a bib around his neck, it was pretty good.
He was ready for the lobster bib, man.
Listen, he was ready. He was ready for an all-you-can-eat lobster fest or all-you-can-eat crab legs. I don't know where he was getting those, because last time I checked, the Monongahela does not produce crab or lobster or any crustacean, really. Maybe a mollusk or two, but definitely not a crustacean. But while we figure out that science, and we're going to send Wolf to go fish in the Mon to see what he can catch.
We're about the science.
Yeah, we are about the science. Oak Island.
There you go.
Monongahela lobsters and crawfish. We'll do it all. But we're gonna step aside another time because it's break time here in the locker room. I think sometimes, you know, guys got to break away. You got to go hit the mouthwash. You got to go get a little shave in before the day starts.
Or get some
in the
coffee.
Locker room. Or go get some Jet Fuel coffee, which is what I had. Well, I was forced to do for a couple of years. It was mandated, and I hate coffee, but it's all good. But we're gonna come back here in the locker room with Wolf, Starks, and the Ninjas here on SNR and ESPN Radio.
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio. Presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Back is Dalton. Big rush. He's sacked back inside the 40-yard line. And that is Alex Highsmith, sack number 7.5 on the year. He came in tied for 12th in the league, and he climbs that ladder.
And, you know, this young man's been climbing the ladder ever since he landed in Pittsburgh. I can remember when Keith Butler first spoke very highly of him, said, this guy doesn't make the same mistake twice. One of the key components of a young ball player is learning to, number one, get the trust of your OC or DC, you know, the coordinators, first of all. And then, second of all, you don't make the same mistake twice, which I made, I remember one game in Miami, I think the same mistake like 3 times. When I got benched, it was, you know, it's a humbling thing. It's hard. It's not easy. And yet we've seen Alex Highsmith grow year by year. And obviously it's great when you've got a marauding partner on the other side in the likes of TJ Watt. But as soon as Watt comes back, you know, when you all of a sudden, now you realize you're getting the TJ treatment over there because you're getting the chips and the dips like you talk about, right? The fact is, Alex, I look at his stats. I mean, he's got 10 quarterback hits. He's got 36 tackles, 8.5 sacks. He's got three forced fumbles, 8 tackles for loss. This kid's playing some ball, man.
No, he exactly is. And this is a kid, you know, I'm going to continue to reiterate. I mean, I watched him at Charlotte.
Right.
I remember calling the scouting department and saying, hey, y'all might need to get somebody down here to look at this kid because he's built different. He plays different style of football. So, you know, I was blessed and fortunate. I got to watch Alex play for 3 years in college before coming, of course, to our beloved black and gold. And he was a kid that's just continually gotten better and better and better. And that's all you can ask for, right?
Right.
If I can constantly see improvement, not only from game to game, but season to season, I mean, that's when you've got the right guy. He has not plateaued yet. I think he's still scratching the surface on his potential.
Oh yeah.
But he's taken a big leap. He has taken the starting role and honored the number 56. Very proud. I'm sure Lamar Woodley is happy to see his number having justice be delivered and be a prominent, fearsome type of name when it comes to the edge presence that Alex Highsmith presents. And now that he's got his buddy back, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
He got his wingman back. He's definitely feeling the mojo.
Well, you know, it's got to be a comfortable feeling to face just one guy instead of multiple assailants on the other side. You know, like TJ gets some regular treatment, you know, and then he'll be able to come off and do it. And I love the fact that he's still working on his spin moves. He's working on his dip and rip. You know, I love the fact that he's now, instead of getting his shoulder square to the tackle, he's now turning and able to dip and go under and throw that uppercut without exposing his upper body to those gargantuan and mammoth offensive tackles who can lock onto you if you present a square punching surface to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, I mean, then there's variations off of that because his long arm stab still works pretty good.
Yes,
When you're thinking you're expecting that little dip and uppercut type of rip move, then he just hits the guy as the guy's kind of off balance, and now you hit that shoulder. And now you collapse him down as well. So, I mean, he's still working on good variety, which is what you want to constantly see. You don't want a guy getting a bead on what you're going to do. I like the fact that he can deliver that spin from an inside foot up or an outside foot up. He understands the rules, right? If outside foot is there, you can't do the spin until you come back to balance. And that's usually on the even step when it's outside, because you want to make sure it's outside leaning into the guy, so you kind of give that pressure. If you do it with that inside foot and you try and spin off of it, puts you off balance, and therefore it's easy. I used to love that. I'm like, hey, this guy does not really know how to spin. And so you're like, okay, all right, well, he wants to spin. Let's treat him like a drill bit. Let's take him to the ground.
There you go. You know who was – oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. I'm finished with the thought. Yeah, go ahead.
Back in the day, Carl Hairston, who was a Philadelphia Eagle, and then later on he was a Cleveland Brown, was one of the wicked spinners. I mean, one of those guys that could – he'd throw that uppercut, then he'd get his keister, his hip into you, trying to, you know, be able to use that as a – like almost like a tire grabbing ground, you know, and then come out of that spin getting upfield. You know what I mean? But you couldn't let him get his hip into you, and it was the hardest thing for me to learn when I played against Carl Hairston. You got to punch, and as soon as he turns that shoulder, you got to punch him right in the hip. You cannot let that hip get inside up against you, because he will leave you like on the ground. You know, when he got that great bull rush. The second unique spin I've told you before was Clyde Simmons, also of the Eagles. But Clyde Simmons was a 6'8", 6'9 guy, and he used to hook your head when he threw an elbow when he would spin, you know? And I had the best defense against it because I was only 6'1". And in the middle of one play one time, he spun through that elbow, and it went right over my head.
Yep, there we go. Listen, sometimes you got the right body type for the job, Wolf.
Yes.
But you know what? We do have the right type person for the job coming up in the next segment. Who do we have, Wolf?
Oh, that would be our man, Alvaro Martin.
That's right. And, of course, what does the top of the hour bode?
Oh.
What is it?
It is the power hour, buddy.
Yes, that's right. We got the power hour coming up next here in the locker room, along with Steelers play-by-play Spanish broadcast. Alvaro Martin here in the locker room. Maybe he brought some arepas. I'll ask him next when we come back here in the locker room with Starks and Wolf here on SNR and ESPN Radio.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.